5. Joining us in the studio now with our Focus 580 programming is host David Inge.
Hi, Dave.
What do you have on Friday morning, sir?
In this first part of the show, we'll be talking about wills and estate planning. And our guest for the program, somebody who is a specialist in that area, her name is Elizabeth Arnold. And we'll be talking about a book that she's written that outlines her philosophy. The title of the book is Creating the Good Will. And one of the things that she argues here, really the basic thing that she argues, is that people don't devote enough time and thought to the emotional issues that are involved. They spend a lot of time dealing with the financial issues, but she says it's the kind of emotional issues are the ones that can cause so much difficulty and so much discord in families. So we'll talk about her approach, which she calls the goodwill. That will be in hour number two, and then in hour number one. And then in hour number two, we will welcome back here a favorite guest of ours, May Barenbaum. She's head of the Department of Entomology at the University of Illinois. She is a scientist who specializes in studying insects. And occasionally on the program, she's here and about them. And we always caution people that it's not a day for extermination. We have a guy for that. Phil Nixon comes and we talk about what do you do if you have an insect problem and you really have to get rid of it. But when May is on the show, it's different. We appreciate insects for the many and varied ways they live our lives. So that will be our number two, and we hope that you can stick with us.
Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, offering licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Bodywork Associates has opened a new office inside the Oasis Center in the Illini Union. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
And this is Focus 580. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And our guest is Elizabeth Arnold. She is a specialist in the area of wills and estate planning. She's president of Sowing Seeds. It's a consulting firm that helps clients incorporate this kind of approach, that what she calls the goodwill approach, into their wills and estate plans. She has authored a book that outlines the basic ideas. The title is Creating the Goodwill, and it is published by Portfolio. So if you're interested, you might want to take a look at the book. And I think one of the things that she would advise is you definitely should start thinking about this well in advance of the time that you need this kind of stuff. And as we talk, of course, questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Ms. Arnold, hello.
Hi, good. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, we appreciate you giving us some of your time. I'm just curious, having looked at your background and knowing that you had an undergraduate degree in religious studies from Yale and then went to Harvard Law School, how did you make that leap?
Well, not all attorneys are bad people.
Oh, I would never. Oh, please. Don't think that I would ever suggest such a thing.
I'm just teasing you. You know, I think that, you know, that many, many, many attorneys have started off as theology students. But actually, what I studied was how politics impact various religions around the world at critical times in history.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So there was a little bit of politics in there.
Well, the one basic idea that I'm sure that you would want to get across, and I'm also certain that anybody who works in this area of estate planning would want to get across, is that that almost everyone, right, maybe one would say everyone, needs to have a will. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who don't. And it's just one of those things that you'd prefer not to think about, but you really should. And as I said, you really need to think about these issues long before the crunch comes, because then you're dealing with a lot of difficult stuff. And you really should sit down and think about what's important to you, what you want to have happen after you die, what you want to have happen with your assets, and have that all figured out so that then when the moment comes, everybody kind of knows what's going on.
You know, you are so right, David. You know that 70% of adult Americans do not have a will. And that's a pretty striking figure. And lots of folks think that perhaps they don't have the assets to pay estate tax. But not only do things add up quicker than you might think, but a will is a place to really make sure that the people that you want to get things. And I think the trick is turning estate planning, you know, we often think of it, most people would rather have a root canal than do estate planning. And I think the way to think of it is of creating a legacy for your loved ones and also of giving of yourself. And there's three components to estate planning. And as you so wisely said again, most people focus, and it's very important to focus on this, of course, but most people think they're done when they've taken care of their assets and their retirement accounts or decided who gets their home. But in fact, there are two other really critically important components, one of which I call the human assets, and those are the communications, not only about why you've chosen to make the decisions you have, but also affirmations of love. The communications both in the here and now as well as in the hereafter about the estate plan that can really solidify relationships and start building bridges today, and that's where the fun can begin. And a second component that often gets overlooked is what I call the small stuff, the highly emotional family items. And every family is going to have different hot buttons. For some folks, it might be grandma's engagement ring. For other people, it might be a treasured lamp or a baseball card collection. You know, and these are the things that, although they have value, the human value to family members is so much higher that these can become real sticking points in families. And I think we all know stories of folks that don't speak to each other because someone got Aunt Pat's lamp.
That's it's true. It's absolutely true. And that's one of the, I think, an important item that you put across is when you're thinking about and making plans for distributing assets, people will think, well, the important stuff are the big things, the big money things. And while that indeed is important, as you say, the things that people fight over are these little things. And your suggestion is when you start to thinking about dispersal of your assets, who gets what, that you actually start with the small things and then move to the bigger things.
Yes. Not only are the small things tangible, and whatever issues come up in your mind about who gets the hot buttons, you know, the small items, those same issues are going to come up with who gets the big items. And you know that siblings are five times more likely to fight over family items than about money. And so it's critically important. Not only it's a preventative medicine in a couple different ways. One, it helps you realize what family dynamics might be in play in general. And two, how you work with the small stuff is really going to set the tone for how people interpret all your other decisions. And most folks, most wills, just have boilerplate language, something like, say there's three children, to each of my children equally, or my personal belongings to my children a third, a third, a third. But what does a third mean? And how are they going to divide it up? And so there are ways to take care of that both in the will, or, you know, or you can give things away in the present time, or you can set up a method of rotating choice or something like that in the will, or you can put tags on things, which is not legally enforceable, but some folks prefer to do that.
We have a caller here to talk with, and I don't think at the beginning I gave our phone number. We certainly want to encourage people who are listening, if you have questions, to call and talk with our guest. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call and you have to pay for the call extra, you can use the toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. We do have someone here on a cell phone north of Urbana, where we are, on our line 1. Hello.
Hi. I have a question with a follow-up question. The first question is this. I have a euphemistic friend who's father died and left about $15 million. And what he did is the father put it into a trust, and then from the trust it's being fed into two sub-trusts for each of the children. And that apparently avoids probate. But the money going from the big trust, father's trust, into the children's trust is trickling in, you know, like $15,000 increments and occasionally $100,000. Question is this. Isn't there a time limit that they have, the people who control the super trust, I guess, to get it dispersed into the sub-trust so that the federal government can come and take its share?
Well,
that's the first question.
Well, I think that when you put things into a trust, there's an, usually it's a living trust is a very common vehicle out there today, which then that trust does terminate when the person passes and it goes to other folks. But the because something is in a living trust, it may avoid probate, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's tax-free.
So, oh, no, I know that.
Yeah, so the question I have is, it depends on the trust document, and I apologize. Without having a chance to look at the specific structure of it, I can't give any legal advice.
Well, no, I'm not looking for legal advice. I just don't. But there is a there is not. The government must have some time limit to be able to take its share out of the trust.
Everything. Everything, you're exactly right. It's important for folks to know that there are very detailed statutes about estate tax, and they interact with the local statutes about filing various things. And so you have to be aware of both sets of rules when you administer an estate. That's a very good point.
Okay. The second question, and then I'll make one really brief comment for other listeners, is this. Part of the the will gave a house which is worth probably about $500,000 to one of the children. But that value, is that value figured out in the evaluation of the overall trust, and then the government taxes that before, because the other child is upset that since the house was left to the sibling, they shouldn't have to have that part, they shouldn't have to pay their half taxes on it.
That, again, is going to depend on how that gift was made in the will. And there's specific legal language which will influence the answer to that question. If there isn't specific language about how taxes are paid, yes, it might come out of the overall estate. But I can't say that for sure without seeing the language, and I apologize for that.
Oh, no, that's okay. And the comment I just want to make for the people who are listening is, one, from what I've read, if you don't want to give some of your assets to certain kin or certain people who might have claim to it, you should specifically state that or give them a certain amount so that they can claim that there was negligence, that you simply forgot to include them, but you were supposed to. And secondly, if you want to, one way to avoid somebody going into a probate argument is to put a clause in the will which states that if the will is challenged, they lose their inheritance.
That's called a no contest clause, and that's a very good point for people that are considering doing that.
Okay, thank you.
Yes,
all right, thank you.
Thank you.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Elizabeth Arnold. She is a specialist in the area of wills and estate planning. She's president of Sowing Seeds. That's a consulting firm that helps clients incorporate the approach that we've talked about already a little bit, the goodwill approach, incorporating that into their wills and estate plans. If you'd like to read about it, you can look for the book that she's authored. It's titled Creating the Goodwill, and it's published by Portfolio. We'd just like to update you very quickly on a story that's being reported here by the Associated Press this morning in Washington, D.C. Four ambulances have arrived at a U.S. House office building where gunfire was reported this morning in a garage. The Capitol was being sealed off while the police investigating the reports. The Senate was in session at the time. The House was not, but at least one committee was meeting. Sound of gunfire was reported in the garage level of the Rayburn House office building. Capitol Police have been going room to room in at least parts of the Capitol, advising staff to stay in their offices. That's all we have on this story right now. It continues to be updated by the Associated Press, and if we have more news, we'll bring it to you. Also, of course, we give people here the opportunity who are listening to call in and ask questions about this matter that we're talking about here this morning, wills and estate planning. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Here we'll go next to another caller, and this caller is, let me see, in Potomac, line number 4. Hello.
Hi, good morning, David. Thanks for taking my call. Very
sure.
Interesting. Since I'm on a cell, I'll make a couple of brief comments and go ahead and ring off. Speaking from personal experience, I was a trustee of a trust for a relative, and I could not agree with your guest more, albeit the financial matters were tied down quite nicely. We were very fortunate. The relative signed the trust approximately 8 weeks before they passed away, and I don't even want to think about, if we didn't have that trust, what sort of a mess I'd be looking at. But we had to go as far as to change the locks on the property.
Yeah.
Because things were disappearing and walking away because one relative or another felt that they were obliged to take this artifact or had memories about that artifact. And as a trustee, I had the responsibility, I think it's fiduciary responsibility, to make sure that, you know, per the trust, things were abided by. So I can tell the listeners that you, the relatives you think you may know, you may not know them once you go through an experience like this. It's eye-opening and sometimes an unfortunate study in the human condition. But the other, so please mark or have the person mark the most incidental item, and I mean from stuffed animals to dining room chairs, because you have no idea what kind of grief that would cause you. But the other two quick comments is we had it turned into a trust because at the time of death, my understanding is if the trust is legal and abided by, the disbursements can start almost immediately, whereas by a will you have that probationary period. So I would advise anybody to get as good of an attorney as they can afford that has an expertise in trust. Also, too, this relative I was dealing with lived through the Depression and had a lot of her assets put in bonds. And per the attorney, we liquidated the bonds to make the payment of the taxes more equal, because then the principal legatees, not to get too into it, would have held a huge burden for the taxes. In other words, with all these bonds were earmarked for distribution, but we liquidated these bonds so everybody paid a fair share of the estate tax, as opposed to it, you know, being on the shoulders of one or two individuals. So I thought I'd throw that out there for whatever benefit it may cause, and it's a very interesting program. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you. I don't know, Elizabeth, you want to comment on any of that specifically?
Well, I think those were very helpful and important points, and I'm glad that the gentleman called. I just want to reiterate that even though there are many wonderful things that trusts can do, there still needs to be a will, even if the will says, I leave everything to my trust. See the trust, basically, you know, shorthand, see the trust for details. But that it is important to have a will, even if you have trust. Hmm.
Well,
so folks don't get confused.
This also gets at the question of how do you decide on a family member to either be the trustee or to be executor, or, you know, to be the one who is going to be in the position to make decisions, possibly at the risk of alienating their siblings or other family members. This can be, for the person who is in that position, can be very difficult and very uncomfortable. And, you know, I can imagine people having been made trustees wishing that that cup had passed to somebody else, you know, that they didn't end up with that kind of responsibility.
Oh, well, that's a very good point. And, you know, in my book, I outline what I call the seven human laws. And number one, in order to keep a compass during this, because there's several key critical decisions that a person has to make when they're thinking about their estate, and their team is one of those critical decisions. So first take a step back and consider, what is your goal and what are your values? What are you trying to achieve for your loved ones? Once you look at that, take a look at the family dynamics of your particular family, because no attorney, no advisor is going to know what's happening in your own family better than you. And that doesn't mean, it certainly can mean having a discussion about things right away, but it doesn't have to mean that. It can also just mean looking, listening, and being aware at family gatherings. What are your loved ones' money behavior? Are they able to save? Do they have similar money values to you? Does money serve them in the same way? What are their relationships like with each other? And once you have that information, you know, and once you start with the small stuff, that'll help you clarify what issues are out there. Then it's critically important to remember that you've got to build a team you can trust, and a team that that includes the executor, the trustee, even the attorney and financial advisors who may still be in the picture with the estate. And communication style is critical. Also, a second point that's critical is certainly the person has to be skilled to do the job. Hopefully they have some emotional intelligence quotient as well. You know, they have some EQ as well about their own family members. Because in a time of grief, whomever you nominate to be to be a trustee or an executor is 70% of the time in my practice is a family member. and they're going to be grieving. And so everyone, including the people that you put as out front as the point people, the trustee and the executor, they're going to be going through a very emotional time, and they're asked to make very left-brain decisions. So the third point I think that's really, really critically important as well is to communicate, and whether you do that now or whether if there's some dynamics in the family and that's not comfortable, there's no reason why you can't write it down and communicate later so everybody understands why, for example, Susie or Jimmy was chosen as executor or trustee, and then to say, I hope that you honor, you know, I chose them because of this. I love you all. And this is not a sign of favoritism, but I'm just doing the best I can, and I chose for these reasons, and just know that I love each of you. For example, I was working with someone last week, and there the eldest son was chosen as executor, for example. And he was a wonderful guy, but he had three sisters that were attorneys, and his particular field was not the law, and so the sisters said, there's Dad being sexist again, you know, without an explanation. I had to go in and say, well, let's think maybe there's some other reasons, you know, why they chose him, and he ended up living in the same town. And but there can be a lot of misunderstandings, and it seems like it's singling out or making someone special. And so it's really, when it's a pretty thankless job, there's a lot of work involved. So it's important for folks to know why you've made the decision that you have and to consider the politics of your choices as well as the skills of the person.
Yeah. We are talking this morning with Elizabeth Arnold, and we'll continue to talk about wills and estate planning in just a moment. First, we want to take a moment or two to talk about another financial matter. People who have been listening to the station this week know that this is one of those times that we ask people to support the station with their dollars. This is our spring fundraising effort, and it's important that we raise as much money as we can because the money that we'll pay for next year's programming has to be in the bank by the end of June. Our fiscal year starts on the 1st of July, so that's our main reference point, and now we're raising the money to pay for next year's programming. In our Pledge Center, where we have volunteers who will take the calls, is Les Schulte. He's our corporate support director. This is the last day this week here on Focus that we'll be able to talk to people about making a contribution. So, Les, can you give us a kind of an update on where things are right now?
I can, David. You know, when we talk about getting down to the wire, you know, we're at the wire here on for Focus 580. And right now, we stand at $83,699 on the board right now, and that's terrific. That has come from 743 listeners who have picked up the phone and made that pledge call. But we need for you to join them right now. We're working towards closing the gap by June the 30th. We need $900,000 in the bank, and there's about $270,000 to go. So every dollar makes a difference. And to that end, a friend of ours, Stuart Levy, from he is a great supporter of this station and the services that we have. He's adding $10 to every pledge, up to 90 pledges this morning. We've had about 44, 45 pledges in for morning edition. We can continue on. So right now, you make a $60 pledge, for example. Stuart will add $10. That's $70 towards programming here on WILL. This is the last opportunity for Focus 580 during this spring pledge drive for you to show your support. This is a program, really, David, that really goes to mission, we think, here at WILL, and our mission is to enrich people's lives through programs and services that educate, entertain, inspire, and empower. And I guess you're going to have to take care of the inspiring part, but I think that... But, you know, we certainly have guests that are entertaining and educational, I think. So 217-244-9455. If you believe that, make a basic membership pledge and be a new friend right now at just the $40 level. You can put that on your credit card, your Visa, your MasterCard, your Discover, your American Express. The number to call is 217-244-9455. We have a full bank of phone volunteers. Let's get all the phones going right now.
All right. And, of course, also maybe we should mention, too, that if people want to pledge online, they can do that as well. We have a secure website. It's willpledge.org. And also there's information there on businesses that match the contributions of their employees, because there are a lot of companies that will do that. So that makes your dollars go that much further. As Les says, we are down to the wire here. This is the last weekday. We'll be talking with you on Focus about supporting the station, and then the fund drive will wrap up tomorrow. So it's really important. You can tell that we have a lot of money to go to hit that target that we've set for ourselves. It's really important that we raise as much money as we can and that we hear from as many people as we can. It's important that we have a broad base of support for what we do here, because that's where a big chunk of the money to pay for the programming comes from. It comes from people like you. So once again, it's 244-9455, the number to call. Thank you very much, Les, and we'll talk with you again at the end of the hour.
All right, sounds good.
And we will continue here to talk with our guest, Elizabeth Arnold. She is the president of Sowing Seeds. That's a consulting firm that helps clients incorporate this kind of approach that she's here been talking about, what she calls the goodwill approach, into their wills and estate plans, because she makes the argument that the money issues aren't always the toughest things. It is the more human and emotional issues that often aren't addressed in the conventional process of wills and estate planning, those things that often end up causing the most discord and causing a lot of conflict in families. It's maybe not so, quite so much the money issues. It's these other kinds of issues. And she has authored a book, outlined some of these ideas. And her book is Creating the Goodwill, and it's published by Portfolio, which is part of the Penguin Group. So I'm sure that you can find it in the bookstore. And we have some other people here with questions, so let's go to them and talk next with someone in Sullivan. And this is line four. Hello.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have first three questions. On trust, I have one for my nephew my father put together. And we'll say he was to receive allocations from this trust when he was 23, but his mother said no, and I am the trustee. Am I legally bound by the terms of the trust or what she would wish to do?
Well, I think it's really important to look and read the trust document and see what it dictates, because it's the mother did not set up the trust. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Then I think you really need to take a look at that trust. And
and they can dispose of the cash wherever they need to be then.
Yes, and oftentimes there's trustee discretion, and depending on what language is used in the trust, it may give you the flexibility to either give the money or not, you know, based on certain milestones or criteria. But those are going to be outlined in the trust document.
Okay. How about if a person had a cognizance to a will and that wasn't enforced, what would happen to the administrator of the estate?
Help me understand a little better. There's a codicil to a will, and was the codicil thrown out as a non-legitimate one? Or
no, it's a legitimate one,
okay.
But it was not enforced as of yet. And she has passed away, and it was to for distribution of cash, but he didn't fulfill the requirements of the will.
The executor did not?
Pardon?
The person that's administering the estate, the executor?
Yes.
Did not follow the wishes?
Of the cognizant.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it might be worthwhile to speak with an attorney about that, because if it's a valid codicil, it is part of the will, and a person needs that's administering the estate does need to follow what's written in the will documents.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, what do you think about FLPs?
Oh, I think there's a lot of issues involved, and it really depends on various factors in a family. So, gosh, I couldn't give a general answer to that without knowing more about a particular situation. My apologies.
Okay, what do you think if you went from an FLP to an LLC due to the liability of the general manager or partner, what would you say?
I would say that there's a lot of benefits to an LLC, and again, I can't give specific legal advice without having a specific case before me, so I apologize for that.
Okay. On an LLC, does that does it take the total liability away from the general partner?
Well, you know, each state has their own I don't want to say idiosyncrasies, but the specifics are often, they're similar, but I am not familiar enough with the specifics of the state law in Illinois.
I got one other question.
Okay.
I'll let you go. if a person has real estate in Florida and they're taxing them to death, raising the property tax, you know, like 100% about every third year.
Okay.
And to file residency in Florida, you have to show tangible taxes. Years ago, I know some people that done that, and at the, we'll say like December the 28th, they debited their account, we'll say like 95% of the total value. Does that still hold, or is that tax evasion?
I don't think we should be talking about this on the radio, only because it's a very good question.
Yeah.
I think you would be best served by speaking with an attorney about that.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
but I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Let's just, though, maybe go back and underline one point, and I think that is a good one. If you are named as an executor, you are bound to carry out whatever is in that will, and you can't, if you think to yourself, well, I think Dad really was wrong about this, and I think I'd like to do something different. If the will says whatever the will says, you're bound as executor to carry that out. You can't afterwards second guess your parent and say, well, I don't think that's really what he wanted, or I don't think that was a good idea, or I think he should have done something different. Whatever's in the will, you've got to carry it through.
Absolutely. That's a very good point, and I want to thank the gentleman for bringing that up. The same with the trustee. There's something called fiduciary duties, which you have to use a reasonable standard of care to follow the wishes of either the trust or the will, the trust if you're a trustee and the will if you're an executor. And if someone isn't doing that, they're in the wrong according to the law. And so whatever the person has said has to be enforced. That's an excellent point, David.
But there also may be some flexibility in how you carry out what the will or the trust says.
Yes, exactly. That's why it's they often call it discretion. And it's going to depend on the strict language of that specific trust, because there's lots of different ways to set things up. And the joy of that is that it gives a person flexibility. For example, you can set up a trust to give payout money when children are certain ages, or you can make a trust to pay out money when children or loved ones, for example, want to buy a home. You know, you can state how much and for what. And so it really gives a person the opportunity to incorporate their values and their real estate goals. But that's why the first step, I think, for everyone is to think about what do they really want people to get and how do they want to support the lives of their loved ones in a very positive way. And that's going to be different from family to family.
Well, let's go and on and talk with someone in Belgium, a nearby community here, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Having stepped through this a couple, three times, I can only reinforce what an earlier caller says. You really don't know somebody until you've shared an inheritance with them. That's not my original thought. But if it's at all possible, I don't know if you speak to this, but if it's all possible, if you have an estate, to me it'd be best if you sat down with all parties before you pass away and say, you know, this is what I have in mind, and explain your feelings to everybody, because you can go through some monumental hell when it comes to an inheritance, just like the gentleman said. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Thank
well,
you.
I think that's exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely. That's an excellent comment, and it's critically important to have a communication about your decisions so that everybody knows why. It's so much better to know why than to be left wondering. And the gentleman was exactly right. If possible, to sit down with everybody or send a letter, the same letter to everyone, and say, you know, these are the decisions I or as a couple we have made, and this is why we love you all, and this is our hopes and our dreams for having something to give. This is why we've worked so hard our whole life to give something to you, because we love you. And we've done the best we could, and this is why we've done what we've done. Some families, it's not possible, or it would make things perhaps worse, based on the dynamics, to talk about things now. But if that's not possible, there's no reason why you can't either write something down or make a video, just shoot a little videotape. Be careful not to make it a legal document and to follow those the same structure that you have in your legal document so that, you know, it's not saying something different, but to explain why you've made your choices and to affirm your love for folks. Having either one of those spares the heirs from fighting each other or having, well, Dad told me this, but Mom told me that, you know, that type of conversation, which really then if you're the executor or a trustee, you can't win.
Yeah. I want to go back and touch on something that we just passed by, and I made a note here that I wanted to make sure I got to it because it's one of the things that you devote a chapter to here, and that has to do with how it is you allocate resources to your children or whoever it is you're leaving behind. And I think that there are some people who would make the natural assumption that, well, we have an estate, well, however much we have, say we have three children, that we should just divide it in even thirds and give everybody a third. And this particular chapter in the book, it's titled something like Fair is Not Always Equal or Equal is Not Always Fair. So that there, you might indeed want to take time to look at the situation. Say you have three children. You know, look at the situation of your three kids and make some decisions about maybe who has the greater need. And maybe that would dictate that no, three equal shares aren't the things to do. Now, again, though, that gets us into this trouble of you're leaving behind a real bad situation if you haven't dispersed equally and you have not explained to your kids why it is you've done what you've done.
You know, that's a very good point, David. And I always say to folks, communicate as much as you can, as soon as you can, but have it be, of course, an age-appropriate conversation. You don't want to tell young children what they're going to inherit when they're not able to receive that information or process it. But letting your children know that maybe perhaps they don't have to quit their day jobs, but you know, they'll still need their day jobs, but they are going to get a little something. You know, setting the expectations, and then if you decide to think about, is fair equal? Because if you have 10 people in a room, every person's going to have their own idea of what's fair and probably what's equal. You don't know; it's hard to know on the outside what internal calculuses, or you know, like an abacus, people have done. For example, one family with whom I worked last week. One of the daughters said, look, I eloped. My sisters had two huge weddings. Tell me why it's, you know, I'm never going to get compensated for that. And her parents never thought about that. And this came out in one of the discussions. So that's why you need that compass of considering your values so that you can decide what in your mind is fair and do the best you can because there may always be someone who's pleased and someone who's not. You know, you can't control how people are going to feel about your decisions, but you can explain them and you can try the best you can and really take an honest look at your motivations in the way that you're setting things up. And if a third, a third, a third is a way that someone wants to go, great. But just be aware of what equal might mean to their kids. Try and look at it through their loved one's eyes because they may have a different perspective.
Yeah.
Another example is a caregiver. There was a woman with whom I worked, and her son had spent, he and his wife both had taken time off work and had spent significant amounts of time taking her to doctor's appointments. And it wasn't that the two sisters were bad people. They loved their mom just as much, but they lived further away. So the mother had seen that stress that this had caused on her son's own family, and so she wanted to give him something special. She left enough for him to be able to take his family on a vacation. Now, how did she use this? She was very great the way that she did it with the other two girls. She gave them one of the emotional items, one of the small stuff things each. One got a treasured vase and another one got a treasured lamp. And she wrote them each a letter explaining her decision to leave the son and his family the money for the vacation, but telling each daughter how much she loved them and how she thought this was something special that they might enjoy, and she chose it just for them. That diffused all negative feelings about the son getting a vacation.
We have another caller to talk with. Let's do that. This is someone listening in Chicago, line 4, our toll-free line. Hello.
Thank you. I'm calling about the matter of the safety and accuracy of records such as a will or trust. This is what I'm going to say. The attorney that made the will out with the person that is now deceased had decided to change her mind and make a trust. And in the process of a particular attorney had moved to another part of the suburbs of Chicago here, and they transferred the records onto a computer only to lose the actual copies and the information on the trust because of their computer follow-up and not informing the person of that fact. And the person that had made out the trust got messed up pretty bad simply because the records were being kept on a computer. So I passed along some of that information as to the safety of making sure that your records of whatever your will or trust are really intact and safe.
Well, I thank you for that comment. It's critically important to have hard copy originals of these documents because, especially with a will, one of the challenges that can be made to a will is even if there's a stray mark that looks like you crossed something out, you know, it's very important to have a pristine document. It's so folks know that is a somewhat unusual practice of.
And here's something more unusual. Then when the party was deceased and they sought out the information from the attorney said, well, we don't have any record of it. Because isn't that, and here the person has the check attesting to the fact that they paid them full $1,500 to make out the trust, and they said, we don't have any record of it.
That's quite remarkable, actually. Yeah.
It can happen, and it did.
Yeah.
The other question I have to ask you is, given the fact that this then had to go through a probate process, because the person essentially died intestate after going through all that, assuming they had a trust, and the executor went on to proceed in a manner that they hoped was proper. However, the question is, after a probate has been completed, would there be any recourse to deal with the estate if probate has already been completed?
Well, you know, that's a very difficult question to answer because the specifics of the law are going to depend on. I certainly would think that there are a lot of different pieces of this which could be explored further in terms of a suit. And
but essentially, if a probate has been completed, that's it? Or have you heard of those things being revisited? And
well, you know, I usually challenges are brought while something is still in probate. These challenges are raised, and
well, see, this is a matter of the executor not having informed all the parties as to what's going on. They usually make an announcement in some newspaper to the effect that the will is in process and so forth, and they leave it at that, and did not try to reach out to all the parties that may have been involved with the person, and so that's where it lays, sort of questioning the capacity of the executor to have completed their duties. Completely.
Well, you know, it is a duty of the people administering the estate that heirs are to know what their rights are under a will, mm-hmm. and if they're mentioned in the estate, this is a
very communication, I guess.
But yeah, communication is key.
Yeah.
There are a lot of different pieces that I'd love to explore further because there are. Yeah, there's a lot here to discuss with a different attorney.
So make sure everything's tight and safe and no loose of the things hanging. That's all I'd like your audience to know. Bye-bye.
All right, well,
thank you very much. Those are very, very valid points. And I'd like to add one thing, and that is that it's important, as the gentleman said, to make sure that you know what's in your documents. And it underscores also why it's important to communicate with your loved ones about those documents, if possible. Mm. And thirdly, make sure people can find your documents. Some folks, no one knows where the will is, or the documents aren't together, or perhaps they've written a living will which expresses a person's health care decisions, or a durable power of attorney, which is often used with a living will. And the power of attorney is basically just saying that you'd like someone to be your agent, either usually it's for financial or health care decisions. But you need to know, you have to have the original, and you need to know where it is at all times. And sometimes it's helpful to keep those things together with important numbers and information, your checking account numbers, things like that, because otherwise the family's going to have to piece together things, and if the executor is not fulfilling their duties, certainly huge problems can arise.
We're coming down to the point here. We have a couple of minutes left. We talked earlier about the fact that being an executor can be a really tough position, and that can then often what happens is the executor is a family member, it may well be a child, and that it can create a lot of problems as the executor tries to work through the wishes of the deceased, and that can create a lot of problems with their family members. It is possible if you have an estate that's much more complicated, you might have a trust, and then you're going to have a trustee. And I think it's probably more likely that the trustee is not going to be a family member, but is going to be some professional that you hire to do this. I mean, that's not necessarily the case, but I'm guessing that probably more trustees are attorneys or people who do that for a living than they are family members. We had somebody here who, off the air, was interested in having you talk a little bit about how you find a good trustee.
That's a very good question. First and foremost, it's critically important, whether the person's a family member or a third party or an institution, is what are their skills? Of course, they need to be qualified to understand the financial decisions that are being made. Secondly, it's critically important that they understand your values and what you're trying to achieve. Again, going back to rule number one, considering your values and your estate goals. Make sure that, because these people are going to have to make, to interpret what your directions are about where the money goes and when. So they really need to understand you. And thirdly, I think communication style is critically important. Is this person going to be able to communicate with the heirs so that the heirs are comfortable? Can they ask questions? Are they going to get all the information they need? And it is important to think about, would you like, often people name close friends that are outside the family or family members or the institutions. Be careful when choosing the institution, too. There can be a lot of turnover, and in my book I go through greater detail about how to protect yourself, but you know, you don't want to make your heirs constantly having to call and find out who is the new trustee. So it's important to select that role very carefully.
Well, I think that we're pretty much at the point where we're going to have to finish for this hour. And we've just recently scratched the surface here. There's much more in the book. It's more complicated than it sounds here, perhaps. But there's a lot to think about here, and it's laid out in a way that just anybody can get it. It's very accessible. So if you're interested, you could take a look at the book. It's titled Creating the Good Will, the most comprehensive guide to both the financial and emotional sides of passing on your legacy. That's the subtitle, by our guest Elizabeth Arnold, and it's published by Portfolio. Elizabeth Arnold is president of Sowing Seeds. It's a consulting firm that helps clients incorporate this approach, the goodwill approach, to their wills and estate plans. And Ms. Arnold, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Today's broadcast here on Focus 580 is made possible with support from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign, with an international brunch, lunch, and new seasonal dinner menu influenced by Caribbean, Asian, Indian, Spanish, and Latin cuisines. Radio Maria now features Sunday dinner with a different and unique menu every week. So we want to say thanks to them. There are a lot of businesses that support WILL, and certainly many, many families and individuals. It is, in fact, the biggest chunk of the money that pays for the programs here on WILL Radio comes from people like you who are out there listening right now. For those who have supported us year after year, we want to say thanks. And if you are a listener, but you're not a supporter, well, we hope that you would change your status right now, this morning, because we're raising the money for next year's programs, and all the money has to be in the bank by the end of June, so we just have about a month or so to go. We have some volunteers who have been very good and good enough to come and take the time here, sit in our Pledge Center to take the call. And also in Pledge Central is Les Schulte. He's our corporate support director.
Yeah, Dave, we brought in the top volunteers on the phones today.
Whoa.
The top group.
The top group. Yeah. I can hear them in the background.
Yeah. Right now they're eating cookies and stuff. Like, get over to those phones. They're going to start ringing right now for Focus 580 at 217-244-9455. You know, you're right, Dave. We need to get $900,000 in the bank. That's going to account for about 42% of the budget next year, and that's what we anticipate that we need. The encouraging thing is they just ran a total. We have a little over $631,000 in the bank right now, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. That leaves us with about $269,000 to go to close that gap by the end of June, by June the 30th. That's why your call right now is so very important. Join our friends like Kenneth Bellini from LaPorte, Indiana, who's called this morning. We've heard from Steve and Nita Schrader from Westfield. We've heard from Rick Winkler from Charleston. Just a few of the people who have called already this morning to make their pledge of support. They're supporting great programs here on WILL. They know that this is a unique service. Also, a good friend of ours, Stuart Levy, he's been a friend since he first came to Champaign-Urbana. He says WILL does a lot for our community with not very much in terms of resources. And now's the time for listeners to provide that not very much portion. Phone your pledge this morning. He'll add another $10 to your pledge of support. Right now, up to 90 pledges. That would be an additional $900 for programs and services here at WILL next year. We've heard from 43 so far this morning. Good start. Let's get those phones going right now in support of Focus 580. This is the final day of our spring pledge drive for Focus 580. We need our fans. If you appreciate the fact that there really is a service, a local program that brings you a wide variety of topics, David, I know that we have health issues on a regular basis.
Yes.
We talk about home issues.
We talk about home, we talk about health, yeah. We talk about automobiles, we talk about a lot of different things. So we really have those kinds of programs that we hope will provide people with basic, useful advice. Yeah. And then we have other programs. We talk with people who write novels. We talk about history. We talk about science. We talk about politics, shows that we hope will get people thinking and will maybe introduce them to some ideas, not necessarily that they're going to say, I agree with that person, but that they will hear what they have to say and think about it. And maybe test that against what they already believe. And sometimes maybe even people might change their minds.
Because one of our values here is to provide a public forum that provides a diversity of voices and opinions. And we think that's really essential and healthy for our democracy.
That's right. So if you agree, if this is a favorite program of yours and these and the others that you hear on the station are important, and you're not a financial supporter, we hope that you will call and make a pledge. 244-9455 is the number, or you can go online to willpledge.org. Thank you, Les.
Thank you, David.
I just want to mention, too, coming up today on the Afternoon Magazine, our meteorologist, Ed Kieser, will be on with the director of the Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College, Dave Leek. They'll join forces to answer your questions about weather and astronomy. That's as part of the Afternoon Magazine in the 1 o'clock hour. Celeste Quinn is the host for the show. May Barenbaum will be here for our next hour to take questions on insects, so I hope you will stick around first, though. We'll take a break for news and a market update.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-